Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This weekend, the dance company Robert Moses Kinn performs a new piece called Bootstrap Tales at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. The piece is inspired by the company's Bootstrap program. In partnership with a number of groups, including the San Francisco Family and Children's Services Division and the San Francisco Court-Appointed Social Advocate Program, the initiative works to help foster youth find a career in the arts. Referring to that phrase that a lot of politicians like to use, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, Robert Moses says far too many foster kids do not have any kind of social safety net. The company's Bootstrap program is designed to engage these young people. And the piece is set to music performed by street artists, artists that Robert Moses met in BART and Muni stations. Joining us today to talk about this new piece are two guests. Robert Moses is a choreographer and the artistic director of Robert Moses Kinn, which he founded in 1995. His latest work, Bootstrap's Tales, can be seen Friday through Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts Theater in San Francisco, and you can watch a trailer and find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. And Robert Moses joins us in studio. Hi, Robert. Nice to see you again.
Hey, Rose. How are you?
Good. Thank you for coming in. We're also joined by Renee Espinoza, Executive Director of San Francisco CASA, which provides a consistent, caring volunteer advocate for abused and neglected foster children. CASA is one of the partner organizations working with Robert Moses Kinn. Hi, Renee. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Let's talk a little bit first about the Bootstrap program. Robert, how did this come about?
Well, I was trying to find a way that I could, this is an overused word, but I could organically serve the community because that's part of our mission. It's Robert Moses Kinn. So part of our mission is to serve the community, to do things that are a positive for the community. And we're really rethinking what we're doing. We did not want to reinvent the wheel for, you know, the 10th time. We've been around a long time and we've tried different things. We wanted to find a way to help that was not dependent on funding in a particular way, and that that we could consistently engage with whomever our partners were. And we wanted a population of folks who really needed the help that we could give. We wanted to also bring what it is that we have, that we've developed, the skills that we have, to those folks, and just make things available. And so what we have that we can make available in abundance is people. And we have space. And then we wanted to find the right partners to make that happen.
Did you know much about foster youth before you took part in this?
I did not know. I had preconceptions. Mm. So the answer to that is I didn't know what I thought I understood. One of which we were just talking about is even the way foster youth is housed and what their actual situations were. I assumed that I assume that most of them are right here in the immediate area, that because the city is doing very well, that to some extent they had some or most of the services in one way or another that they might need, and that that there were things that were out there for them, but that there was more that we could do. And as I'm finding out, that's not the case.
Mm. And we'll talk about that, because before the show, I said, this sounds like an amazing project. And in the 70s or the 80s, when you could actually be an artist and pay $200 for a room and make it, that's unfortunately just not the case anymore. Renee, how did you come to connect with Robert to work on the Bootstrap program?
He just put the call out.
Right. I was sitting in the office and talking through things with the folks in the office, and said, okay, so what do we do? Let's, okay, what? The city's got to have the way to get to folks. Maybe they can help us. So we called Barrett Johnson at the what's the office?
Human Services
at the
Agency.
At the Human Services Agency, and said, this is the idea that we had. And so then we went in and we talked to Barrett, I think, twice before he said, okay, these are the people you need to talk to. These are the organizations you need to talk to because they're solid and they're doing the kind of work that's making a difference. And so then we had, I think, meetings at the office on Mission, just off Mission. Mm-hmm. And then we met at the studio and we talked about what might be possible. That's how we started, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he came, as he said, with a very organic approach of just saying he wanted to help. These are the resources that I have. And he then approached us as partners, knowing that we serve youth in foster care, and said, how can I help? What does it look like? And not necessarily putting any parameters around it, except for the fact that he wanted to encourage and engage people in the arts, particularly our foster youth. And so it's been a pretty positive collaborative that we've established.
And I think that's an important thing, is that what we're trying to do is build something that doesn't have very, what's the word you just used? You just said that doesn't have a lot of mishigosh around it, right? We want to just be able to put this thing in front of the kids, put the opportunities in front of the kids, put the possibilities in front of the kids, put the options in front of them, so they say, wow, this is something that I could do. This is somewhere that I could go. This is, wow, your life is kind of like mine in a way, in that what you're doing is dependent on you getting up and feeding your own creative soul. And so that's really what we're trying to do.
Can you talk a little bit about the state of foster kids right now in San Francisco? How many foster kids are in San Francisco? And I'm sure that there are lots and lots of challenges because of the high costs and so many other issues.
Sure. I would use the term in in a very interesting manner. So yeah. San Francisco has just under 1,000 young people in foster care. And that means that they were living in San Francisco and they were brought into the system while being residents of San Francisco, and their families are here. That doesn't mean necessarily that they're staying here. About 60% of our young people who are in San Francisco's foster care are actually placed out of county because we don't have enough housing for them. We're also competing with neighboring counties for housing. So we're seeing more and more of our young people being removed, as they're being removed from the home, being placed further and further away in Sacramento, in Modesto, in Manteca. It just keeps getting further and further out. And what that ultimately ends up happening is there's a lot of social isolation for these young people. If you can imagine, you're being removed from your home for legitimate reasons, and then you're now being removed from your school, from your peer group, from teachers or other adults that maybe you have confided in, and you're being placed further and further away. And that's really isolating. So it's sort of compacting the trauma that's actually happening. And so one of the things that we're trying to do with CASA is creating a relationship with one adult so that they still have that connection to the city, so that they still have that connection, that they can speak to someone. These are all volunteers that we work with. They're not being paid. They're a trusting mentor, advocate, friend to this young person in foster care, so that they could speak openly and say, this is what I need, this is what I want. And a lot of that sort of gets lost as a young person moves from home to home, because that's the other thing that happens in foster care is you don't stay in one place for very long. You often move a lot. And so who's holding that narrative for that young person? A lot of the time, it's the CASA volunteer who's holding that narrative and ensuring that records are maintained and kept up to date.
1,000 foster youth and 60% placed outside of San Francisco, some as far away as Modesto.
Yes.
That's a major change, major culture shift.
You can't take BART back into the city from Modesto. Yeah.
Robert, I read that that's one of the things that really surprised you.
Yeah, that just kind of blew me away. I thought, what? This is your home and you can't be. I mean, I know there are attenuating circumstances that sort of pull kids away from their families and things, but you can't be in your home. And this notion of isolation I think is a big one in the work. The notion of sort of that continual motion that you're sort of never settled, that your space isn't your own, that it maybe it's shifting. And you're saying you're going from one place to another, that the home shift, that's a big sort of idea in the work, that things don't settle, that they just keep moving. And at the same time you're having these engagements, you're also alone. That's really sort of powerful stuff, and that's AC that you can pull on to create movement and art.
How are you using especially this piece of information that you used in the performance?
Well, it's just that. It's that constant sense of motion, the sense of not being settled, the sense of sort of being in a group but not mm-hmm. being a part of the group, the sense of being apart from, without trying to. One of the things I was saying is what I don't want to do is I don't want to sort of do a pain parade where you tell someone's story in a particular way and it's like one person's tale and it's it didn't feel right in this instance for that. That this is really about, I think, the situation that how would any of us feel if you're displaced, you're unsettled, you don't have your own space, yeah. you don't have control of your life, and then at some point when all of this, and at some point, and I'm being dramatic, but then at some point when all of that is done, then you're on your own, and you got to, you have to pull yourself up. And the point of the Bootstraps Collaborative that we're talking about is to give these kids who actually do, in some ways, have all the stuff that they may need to create their lives from the beginning. They don't need to wait for someone to create their lives. That you've got some kind of network there. And if you're creative or if you have an inclination towards something, you find out what that inclination is early enough, and someone shows you a way to get started, just a way to spark it, mm-hmm. that you are a self-starter. You are your own startup, right? You're your own seed that you drop in your own ground, and that's it. You grow and you move forward. You turn yourself into that oak that you need to be. So that's what this is about.
I think what Robert is referring to is something that we call either passion projects or identity projects for a young person. So we know that for a young person to really thrive, they need to find their passion. While in care, they have housing, they have shelter. But who is really fostering that sense of individuality and growth, and who is helping them to really identify something that has meaning for them? Because one of the things that we do know with young people in foster care is when they exit the system, that they are likely, they don't have a community. Mm. Or if they do, they've created it themselves, and depending on the type of community it is, it could be a positive community or it could have negative impacts. And so what we're really trying to do is help young people identify what their strengths are, identify what they're good at and what they want to pursue, their passion. And in doing so, it also helps them to create a community of like peers, of mentors, of institutions that they can connect to that also have resources. And so that's what we're really trying to do with this collaborative, is help young people identify their passion and provide and help them create their own community.
Right. And I think that the idea of both grounding themselves in their individual identity and finding like communities or communities that will be supportive is really, really important, because perception is not everything, but it's a lot. And when if you're out there by yourself and you feel you're being looked at in a particular way, and you don't have the armor, and armor is the knowledge, is the armor, the knowledge that, oh, I know that this is what I'd like. I know that this is where I'd like to go. I know that these are the people who have shown me something, and I know that there is a path there. And that's the armor, yeah. But if you're being perceived in a particular way, you need some way to bounce misconceptions mm-hmm. off.
How does art affect that armor? What I love about what you're doing is introducing young people to the choreography that you do, Robert, or the dancing, or the costume design, or the lighting, just all of the different aspects that go into making a performance. How do foster youth respond to that? I mean, in this kind of environment, a creative environment.
you know, it's an opportunity to explore something that they haven't been exposed to. Mm. So whether it's music or dance or well, even the technical side of the program, it's something that they haven't had the opportunity necessarily to be exposed to, and it's done in a manner that is inviting and open to them. I think a lot of times when you're growing up, you hear that, you know, whether you're growing up with parents or siblings, you sort of learn from them and learn from what they're saying or what they take for granted. Whether you're going to the office every day, then your kids know that you're going to have an office job or you're going to go to the office. So young people who are removed from the home and are being placed in many different home settings don't necessarily get to have that sort of narrative with them. So creating opportunities for them to explore and really look at what their passion is, to help build up their strengths. What do they really want to do? A lot of times our foster youth, no one really asks them, what do you want to do? What is your passion? Right. They ask, you know, do you have a roof over your head? Do you have enough clothing? Which are all really important things. But to go to that next level about what's in the heart and what's the passion, that's what really makes someone strong and really helps them to succeed.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, I think the answer, my answer to your question is sometimes you don't really know. If you're a 12-year-old and you are doodling and drawing all the time, every day, right? And every time you draw, you're putting people or the characters or whatever you do in different outfits. You don't know necessarily, you don't necessarily understand that what you're doing is costume design, mm-hmm. right? And that by the time you're 16, suddenly you've got thousands of costumes that you've designed. And then someone hopefully comes in and says to you, well, you could be a costume designer. Well, let me see what you've done. You go, well, this is wonderful, or this is potential, or let's see where this might go. And you begin to look at, ideally, you begin to look at what you're doing in another way, and you see that you, again, rooted in yourself, are your, in a way, your own kind of expert, at least in who it is you want to be or who you're finding out you want to be. And this is really about finding out, I think, who you want to be in some ways, or having those possibilities.
Robert Moses Kinn is a choreographer and the artistic director of, I'm sorry, Robert Moses is a choreographer and artistic director of Robert Moses Kinn, a dance company he founded in 1995. And his latest piece, Bootstrap Tales, can be seen this Friday through Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. The piece was inspired by the company's Bootstrap program in partnership with organizations like the San Francisco Court-Appointed Social Advocate Program. It works to help foster youth find a career in the arts. Referring to the phrase, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, which we hear, Robert Moses says so many foster kids and so many people throughout society do not have a social safety net. We're also joined today by Renee Espinoza, Executive Director of San Francisco CASA, which provides a caring volunteer advocate for abused and neglected foster children. And we'll talk more if you'd like to get involved with CASA. We'll talk about that later in the show. If you have a question or comment for Robert or Renee, we'd love to hear from you. If you have worked in the foster system, if you work with foster children, or if you've gone through the system, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think art can offer these children, or what can art learn from them? 866-798-8255. Artists, I should say, learn from them. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can leave a comment on social media. What have you learned from foster youth, Robert? It's a big question, but when you brought them in, what really stands out for you?
Well, we're still at the beginning of the process, and we're still sort of figuring out where exactly how, which portions of the project are going to come together. Mm-hmm. So what I'm working with right now is the ideas that we've been talking about, not individual stories. I think the situation's teaching me a lot, just sitting here talking. So we're sitting outside talking, and I'm getting very excited about the kinds of information that I'm the curtain hasn't gone up yet. the kinds of information that I'm getting, and Renee is sitting there while I'm talking or reading a book and jotting down notes sort of furiously. And what I like is the passion that's there, and the need, because that's what I'm feeling, is a need to I hate that. I don't really – the term the cliches are hard, but the cliches are useful because there's something real in them to really make a difference, to really help, to really sort of – so the cliches are hard because they sound like cliches, but that's what – you know, and finding something that's really real for me and the artists that I work with in the company and any of the artists that may come in that want to spend some time with youth.
And Renee, what has this experience been like for you?
It's been a great experience. Like I said, when Robert approached us and asked us to participate in the collaborative, it was really refreshing because there weren't a lot of barriers. He came with sort of his idea of I have some resources, I have space, I have talent, I have people, and I really want to help the community. And he reached out to the partners and said, you all are professionals in the field working with the young people that you serve. And so how can we work together to create the program? And I think that's been really refreshing. And I'd like to offer out a challenge to other business owners and community members that if they have – everyone has resources. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they have a particular way in which they want to use them. And with Robert, it was very open. And I think even to the extent of not putting barriers in front of us like, oh, well, I don't want too many kids in the studio, or I want to make sure this happens. None of that has been part of the process. It's all been very collaborative and organic around what is best for the young people that we want to serve.
And I was going to ask you that because we live in one of the wealthiest cities in the country with, as you said, so many resources. So what resources are there for foster youth in San Francisco?
I mean, we live in a wonderful, beautiful city, like you said, with a lot of resources. I think it's asking folks to sort of take inventory and stock of the resources that they have. Mm-hmm. And how can they offer that up to the community at large, whether you're a large corporation, you have space, you have talent, and really going to organizations and saying, how can we be helpful without any sort of pretext around what you really want to do or your expertise, because I think it's really about listening to what the community needs. Mm-hmm. And really hearing it and then sort of responding and working with the different programs to develop the resources available that you would have available. I think if you're individuals, we stated earlier 60% of our young people are placed out of county. Maybe consider being a foster parent, opening up your home if you have those resources. It's not for everyone, but I would encourage you, if you are interested, to go to our website. We have a link to the HSA website, and you can look and see if you want to be a foster parent, if you want to be a CASA and work one-on-one with a young person. Go to our website, sfcasa.org, and you can find information out about that as well. So whether you're a company, you're an individual, there's something that you can do. Just come open with an open mind and an open heart and really listen. Yeah. And I think you'll create a wonderful partnership.
Yeah, I would answer that by saying, you know, and hopefully this isn't too charged, but I know there's a little bit of a arts, old arts or live arts, tech separation. There's some perception that there's not kind of the support there from some of the tech companies that might be able to support the arts or an organization like CASA in some way. And I think what you're saying and what I'm saying is just figure out a way. So when we're talking about it, I'm just like, this is what I have. This is what I can do. And if you guys have got, you don't have to come through me. You don't have to come through me. But if you guys have got a day, a Saturday, from 3 to 6, where you've got four people who are willing to show some youth how to begin working in a program, designing something, well, why not do it? Take that. Those 3 hours and those four people who might be willing to do something and make that happen. And I don't know that they're not doing it, but I don't know where they're doing it. Mm. So sorry to throw that out there.
But, no, it's important.
But there are folks here who need the help, and
right.
And they are rooted in the community, and they're being uprooted.
Today we're talking about the new dance piece, Bootstrap Tales. You can see it this weekend at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about public investment in K through 12 schools. It has dramatically declined over the past decade, and so much is happening. In West Virginia, educators are taking part in a statewide strike tomorrow over stagnant pay and rising health care costs. And then 90 school districts in Oklahoma have shut down school on Mondays. They're now going to school just 4 days a week. Here in California, we rank 41st among all states in spending per K through 12 students. So tomorrow, what is happening to education funding? Friday, it's our media roundtable. And if you have a guest idea or a show idea, you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. Today we are talking about a new dance piece called Bootstrap Tales. It's from the dance company Robert Moses Kinn, and you can see it this Friday and Saturday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts here in San Francisco. Find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. The piece is inspired by the company's Bootstrap program in partnership with a number of organizations, including the San Francisco Court-Appointed Social Advocate Program. The initiative works to help foster youth find a career in the arts. And today we're joined by Robert Moses, choreographer and artistic director of Robert Moses Kinn. He founded the company in 1995. Renee Espinoza is executive director of San Francisco CASA, which provides a consistent, caring volunteer advocate for abused and neglected foster children. And you can see the piece Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions or comments, if you are a foster youth volunteer, if you were a foster child, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think the arts can offer these kids? And living in a place like San Francisco with so many resources, maybe you work for a company or an organization that wants to step up and work with foster youth. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Renee, before the break, you talked about opening up your home to a foster child. Again, we should say that there are 1,000 foster kids in San Francisco. 60% are placed outside of the Bay Area, some as far away as Merced, because there's just not enough housing. First off, can you just give us a brief overview? What is required in case anyone's interested in opening up their home?
Well, I would encourage you to visit the HSA website, and you can go to the CASA website, CASA.org, and we have a link, and you can review, you can link to the HSA website and look at all of the requirements. There is some training and housing requirements that are involved, but all of the requirements and everything is listed on their website.
Okay, and then the volunteer program, which I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have volunteered with, the San Francisco Court-Appointed Social Advocate Program.
Yeah, it's special advocates.
Special advocates.
It's okay. Yeah, so they are everyday people, volunteers, community members, who really want to make a one-on-one connection with a young person in foster care. We hold orientations weekly. We invite the community to come out and attend one of our orientations. And once, if you are interested, we ask you to join one of our trainings. It's a 40-hour training, so it's quite involved. However, we feel that we support and train our volunteers very well to work outside of the community and with our young people. They play a dual role. They're a mentor. They create a relationship with the youth in foster care. But the interesting thing is they're also sworn in as officers of the court, which means that they have access to all the legal documents, and they have the ability to make recommendations to the judges in court about what they feel is best for that young person. They actually are the voice of the young person, or they help bring that voice to court for that young person. Oftentimes, our young people are not included in decision-making processes. And one of the things that we do with CASA is ensure that young person's voice is heard.
Mm. Robert, we've done a lot of shows about the arts over the years, but especially after this election, we've had artists on talking about the responsibility they feel or the role that they're playing right now. And then we hear from listeners who say, you know, I'm going to dance performances and concerts, what have you, to kind of escape what we're dealing with right now. And I know that some artists don't like that question, what do you want the audience to walk away from after they see the piece? But since you are really bringing this issue
to the stage, what are you hoping to communicate to the audience?
Well, I think we should parse things a bit. First, I mean, you have your responsibility as a human being and as a citizen, and part of, and because I have an ability to sort of create work in this way, then this is one of the ways that I can manage that responsibility. And I can go vote, I can march, I can do those things, but I can also make work that I think speaks to the issues that I think are important. And what you come away with is that the issue is important. And then ideally what you say to yourself is, I felt that, and maybe I need to manage my feelings in my life in a particular way. I don't know how you might want to do that. Are you going to, you know, maybe you'll call in, maybe you'll become an advocate, maybe you'll talk to the Board of Supervisors and say, hey, you guys need to kick in something more. So there's, so some of these set asides for housing, really it's about youth, housing youth. And you know, so I don't know. I mean, that's because that's a ridiculous number. I mean, just to jump on that again, that's a ridiculous number that 60% are housed outside of basically where their home is, where they're, the area they know, where they're comfortable, the people who they have some connection to, even if it's, even if in that moment that something's troubled. That's obscene. It really is. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. So if you're asking me what I want people to come away with, hopefully they'll come away with themselves in such a way that they'll do the next thing.
What are your thoughts, Renee?
I appreciate what Robert just said. I do think that what does it mean to be a community member? And, you know, you can vote and you can talk to your supervisors, but what really is the next step? And going back to sort of looking at these passion projects or identity projects for young people, what is your passion? What is your hobby? What do you like to do? And how can you share that? How can you pay it, to use little cheesy quote, how do you pay that forward? Mm-hmm. But how can you engage someone else to really enjoy something that you really like doing? It's the arts, whether it's dance, it's music, it can be tech, it could be a craft that you have. Sharing that with another person and really helping to build their own passion and skill is something that as a community member we can all do.
And we were talking before the show just about how difficult it is to decide to become an artist as a young person right now, mm-hmm. right? To really embrace your passion rather than the pressure of maybe becoming an engineer. No offense at all against engineers, but I mean, I've met young people who say, you know, I want to be a high school counselor, but there's all this pressure to go into tech. That's where the money is. Mm-hmm. In a place like the Bay Area, that where the housing is so expensive, I mean, even if you have a, quote, middle-class job, it's hard enough to make ends meet. We've done so many shows with artists about how they've got jobs at night and on the weekends where they would just like to dance and create art, but that's impossible now. So how do you talk to young people about that?
I would say start. I mean, you're here. Do the thing. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's very difficult when it costs money to just breathe in this city. Mm-hmm. But you just have to do it. You don't have to do it with all the elements that are sort of going to make something glisten and shine. And you can sort of have to bring it together in different ways. You have to find a way to make it work for you. But don't throw it away. Don't get swallowed by life when you're trying to live it. You know, I mean, don't get swallowed by someone else's life. Make sure that you are fulfilling what it is that you want to be. Otherwise, what are you doing? And when you're young, I think that's really the time to acknowledge that and say, okay, I'm going for this. This is really what I want to do. This is really who I want to be. And you figure that thing out. I think it's much tougher than when I started. But I remember sleeping in the living room with like three or four other people, and somebody had the lease somewhere, you know, and like spending a week in someone's apartment because they, you know, let me have the floor for however many days I was on the floor. And that, you know, I don't want anybody to have to do that, but it is possible to figure these things out. And this is why your networks are important. And your networks don't have to be my networks or anyone else's networks, but people who are going to be supportive in some way you know, find those folks and sort of just bring them into your circle. Yeah.
I think that's what the Bootstrap Collaborative is really trying to do. It's, and I think particularly within the arts community around, it is a community, right? What you just said about opening up your home and banding together. And that's something that young people in foster care don't necessarily have an opportunity to establish their communities or create their own communities, because the way that the system works, they're moved many different times, and they can move from Modesto to Antioch to Stockton to San Francisco. I mean, they're not moving 2 miles away. They're moving large distances. And we know that everyone needs a community to thrive. And so one of the things that we're trying to do with Bootstrap Collaborative is help to create the community for young people, or help them to identify who it is, so that when good things happen or bad things happen, they have someone to reach out to. I think we can all name 5 or 6 people that we would call in a heartbeat if something really good happened or something really sad happened to us. And everyone needs that community. And what we're trying to do is really help build that community for our young people in care.
We have a comment from Lorraine on social media. She says, art is alive thanks to you and your colleagues. Foster kids are so full of spiritual and emotional souls. Glad to hear that you're nurturing their funk and passion. As a teacher, this means so much. It equates into fewer shutdown kids.
Thanks, Lorraine.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lorraine. You can leave us a message on social media, or you can drop us an email, yourcall@kalw.org. I mean, we're talking about so many issues here. Art, foster youth, how to talk to young people about really pursuing a life in art at a time when it's so difficult to make ends meet here. The performance, Bootstrap Tales, well, you can see it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. The piece is inspired by Robert Moses Kinn's Bootstrap Program in partnership with groups like the San Francisco Court-Appointed Special Advocates Program. It encourages foster youth to find careers in the arts. Today we're joined by Robert Moses, choreographer and artistic director of Robert Moses Kinn. Renee Espinoza is executive director of San Francisco CASA. Robert, I learned about this piece in the Chronicle when they profiled you. They kind of followed you in the BART station talking to street musicians. How did you come up with that concept for this piece?
Well, I think that's another aspect of this notion of bootstraps. A lot of those folks are really on that edge every day. It's a real thing for them every day, moving forward, that next step forward, making that dollar so that they can get that meal or pay the rent or whatever that current issue might be. So in a way, it seems like it's not directly connected, but it is that impulse that I think that I had about, you know, what does it mean to start over again at whatever point in the beginning. And one of the musicians I met, I think he was about 55 and had played with everybody and had done any, you know, had played in huge arenas and was now doing this. I think he does this occasionally. I think he still gigs. But every day, if he needs to, he gets up and he does that. He goes out, he grabs his bass and he plays. And that's, you know, that's another sort of aspect of this. And this notion of, I think it's important that the notion of having your individual armor, being able to carry with you that thing that you need to survive, really operates in that arena. But what also operates in that arena is the idea of your network. So what's interesting to me is that everybody has standards. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm running around, I'm busy, and I said, okay, we're going to connect. We talked a few times. We're going to connect, and we're going to talk, and we're going to make this thing happen. I'm going to, you know, talk to you about using your music. And he said, okay, well, call me today. And he said, okay. I didn't call him that day because for whatever reason I got busy. I'll call him tomorrow morning. And I looked at my phone at about 9 o'clock, and he said, because you did not keep your word, I'm out. Oh. And I thought, wow, this man has really high standards, right? So it's about, what I mean when I say that is that he had a sense of self-worth. I was no longer at that moment able to be a part of that community because I didn't behave in a way that he needed me to behave in order to validate myself according to who he sees himself as being. And I think that that's important. That not just any group of folks. I think you build your community. Mm-hmm. And just because someone comes up to you with what should be an opportunity or something, that should be all you. I think you'll be happy to do this because you didn't keep your word. You're out. So you're out of my circle now. And I thought that was perfect because, again, we're talking about perceptions. Mm-hmm. That shifted my perception of what I was trying to deal with and who I was dealing with right off of where I think it was, right? So it was kind of centered on me. I thought, okay, let me go through this again. I need a more open idea of what I'm doing. So
That's great.
Do you have any other experiences you'd like to share? Because I read that in some cases people were open to it and other people were very skeptical. Like, who are you? What is this project?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things I think that happens is when you approach people like this, it's how many times have they heard this? Right. And how many people come up to them in the street saying, if you do this, then maybe this will come about. And I think people are skeptical because the world sometimes operates the way it does. And so, there were a few times where you sort of get the look, and any number of times where, someone's willing, okay, you can record this for $5, but I'm not giving you my contact information. Right. So again, falling outside the circle.
And the musicians you met in the BART stations or on the streets, they joined musician and composer PC Munoz in the recording studio to complete and master their new work.
What happened is I recorded them in the street, and then we took them into the studio, and PC mastered them in the studio. It was more difficult for me to pin these artists down than I thought, and because sometimes you'd show up somewhere and they would not be there, or they wouldn't be interested in going somewhere else, or they're leaving town. Any number of things. So we took what we could into the studio.
Well, let's hear a piece. This is from a piece called Zombie. The words in this piece are by Robert Moses, and it's spoken by PC Munoz, who recorded and mixed the music for the show.
A beating was coming, and death rode its back. Being a pacifist, I moved. After all, stillness is also death. Death, happy to have used terror to get its way. So still I moved again and again. From what was Philly to what was Jersey. And on to what is Compton. From there to home, to mosque, to church. But not job to job. I had only one job. The store. We should always beware half-assed analogies, but there are a few that can be made. People need something, always, even when there is nothing left. I sold to everyone, at times what they needed, water, weapons, other people, well, the company of other people in the form of information. Even now there was an economy. It wasn't based on information, money, or creativity. It was life. Life. How could you, my customer, squeeze a bit more out of the day? Use me. That's where I come in. That's what I sell. A few minutes more in the form of rumor, bait, and hope. Are there any camps nearby? And for me, I just got what I could carry.
That is an excerpt from a piece called Zombie in the new dance performance Bootstrap Tales. It'll be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. Find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. The words are by today's guest, Robert Moses, and it's spoken by PC Munoz, who recorded and mixed the music for the show. Robert, where do the words come from?
Well, I think what we're talking about, that idea of moving from place to place, I think there are a number of influences sort of intermixed there, that notion of that constant motion, that notion of having something to sell. I think that in some ways comes from the musicians because they're standing there on the streets and they're sort of selling not themselves, but a moment of giving someone the relief of thinking, oh, well, I'm not in that situation. Mm. Or, you know, maybe people have an actual appreciation for what they're doing. So I think some of the work is about being seen and being, it's called zombie, I think, because, it, you know, I'm creating this thing, so I have to think about it as I'm processing it. But some of it is about being observed, right? So that idea of the individual being observed by the group, which is those folks who are watching you, or that isolated person in the middle of something that they can't control. So I think that's where some of that comes from.
Mm. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Patricia. Hi, Patricia. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. So I had the pleasure of working with Robert Moses while I was a student at Stanford, and I was a medical student at the time. And through my medical training, we've read a lot about adverse childhood events and how damaging they can be to brain health and to your immune system. And I think these type of art-related activities can really give youth a way to build some resilience that we now understand is also a biological process. So I think sometimes we think, yeah, this is great because it makes people feel good, but we don't understand that there's also a very significant portion of this that can help them with their well-being, something that is much more tangible than just feeling momentarily good. And listening to this is so inspiring, and I'm very excited to make it out to this weekend to watch Bootstrap. So,
well, I'm glad to hear from you, and say hi.
Hi.
Well, thank you, Patricia. You know, you bring up such a good point because, Renee, I mean, we're talking about, okay, 1,000 foster youth in San Francisco. 60% are placed outside of the city for a variety of reasons, as far away as Modesto. It's difficult. We're living in really difficult times right now. It's hard to make ends meet. For young people, there's all this pressure around social media, and especially for foster youth, without that support system, what's next for them? I mean, in some cases, I've read that when they turn 18, they're on their own. Is that right?
Well, luckily, California passed a law a few years ago that young adults, non-minors, can opt into extended foster care up until 21. Okay. So a lot of our advocates work with young folks to ensure that they take advantage of the opportunities and resources available to them. If they age out of, quote unquote, age out of foster care at 18, they can opt back in up until 21. And it's really sort of a bridge to helping them transition into adulthood.
Do most of them opt in?
Most of them do opt in. I think one of the things that we do with our advocates is really help our advocates really work with young people to understand the benefits. As you can imagine, if you're in the system, a lot of times you don't want to be in the system once you're 18. It's your opportunity to leave the system and leave everything behind. And for some young people, that's what happens. And for some folks, they tend to opt in. And for those folks that leave, our advocates could get a call 3 months down the road saying, it's really hard. Guess what? I moved back to the city. Well, moved back. Mm. I've couch surfed as much as I can. I can't afford the rent. I can't afford to live here. I need some help. And so we're there to help them. We'll help them opt back into the system and start getting the resources that that they can get.
Patricia also makes a good point about all of the science and the information we have now about how trauma affects children throughout their lives, how malnutrition affects children throughout their lives. And I loved what she said about the importance of art. In her case, it really helped her with adverse childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been doing some research and looking at all the different resources that a young person needs to succeed. And really, I've been looking, currently reading this one book that looks at young people growing up in public housing in Baltimore. Hmm. And what does it look like for those young people to succeed, those that succeeded and those that didn't? And so really working with social services to provide the appropriate housing food and clothing and basic necessities for a young person is one thing. But then with CASA going sort of the extra mile and helping the young person really develop their community of origin and their passion project. And one of the things that I've been reading in this book, Coming of Age in Another America, is really around the young people that succeeded had a passion project. They went above and beyond sort of the basic necessities and identified something that they could really they had a strong sense of self with, and that was what really helped them succeed. In doing so, it helped them to define goals. It helped them to and in defining goals, they could actually see the future. A lot of times young people in foster care, they don't know if they're going to come home and their bags are packed and they're going to be moved. So their future is 24 hours, 48 hours. So thinking about long-term goals is something that we really work with our young folks. So a passion project, helping them find something like dance or music that they can identify with, helps them to create goals. And it also helps to create that community that Robert was talking about. And that's really important no matter what. We had a quick story, a young person that had moved 17 times while in care, 17 times. One of the things that our advocates ensured is that she always went back to this program. No matter where she moved, she would talk to their foster parents and ensure that they got her to that program on a monthly basis. And that was her community. And so that when she graduated high school, that was a community that helped her get in, that helped her get into college. And so it's really having caring adults. Mm-hmm. It's having caring communities to support our young people.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts, Robert?
I'm just sort of floored by what you just said, and I just think the idea of doing whatever it is that you can from whatever place that you can is what will work for us.
Robert Moses is a choreographer and artistic director of Robert Moses Kin, the company he founded in 1995. Renee Espinoza is executive director of San Francisco CASA. And if you're interested in opening up your home to a foster youth or volunteering with the San Francisco Court-Appointed Special Advocates Program, you can find more information at their website, or our website will point you over there. And I hope you can see the new piece, Bootstrap Tales, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. It's inspired by the Bootstrap program, which works to help foster youth find a career in the arts. Renee and Robert, thank you for coming in, and thank you both for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about public investment in K-12 schools, which unfortunately has dramatically declined over the past decade. Tomorrow, educators in West Virginia are taking part in a statewide strike over stagnant pay. Underfunded districts have cut school to just 4 days a week in Oklahoma. And here in very wealthy California, we rank 41st among all states in spending per K-12 student. Why have states cut public education funding so deeply? What are the consequences, and how can we turn this around? Thanks to Laura Winnes for producing today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.